Sovereign Forum Northwest with your host, Eddie Riot Jr. We're going to start off with Washington State Representative David Hackney, who represents the 11th Legislative District, and also this past session was chair of the Black Members Caucus. And so I would like to Representative Hackney, who my listeners might be that familiar with, just to give us a little bit about your background, Representative Hackney.
Thank you very much, Eddie. So I'm an attorney. I've worked as both a former federal prosecutor for the U.S. Department of Justice. I was also a war crimes prosecutor for the United Nations, and I was I made a transition over to employment law, and I was the I was a in-house counsel for numerous startups, technology startups, and eventually became the lead attorney, employment attorney at the Nature Conservancy, a billion-dollar environmental NGO based back in Virginia. And I came out here to work for Amazon briefly, and it did not work out, but I found this an excellent community and an opportunity to get involved, so I did.
And that's great. You know, we had a short legislative session. Would you distinguish for our listeners the difference between a long session and a short session? What are the differences in the two sessions?
The real big difference is we have a biennial budget. So our budget is for 2 years. So at the during the biennium, which was in 2022, that's where we set the budget out for 2 years. And then in 2023, then we'll come back. And in 2024, we come back and we do a supplemental budget. So we just do changes. And we also have, the short session is 60 days. The long session is 110 days. And the short session is 60 days because members have to come back and campaign for reelection. So our primaries are in August. So the session ends in mid-March so that for those of us, you know, who need to, we can get started on our campaigns.
Well, you know what, Representative Hackney, I sure appreciate your honesty and forthrightness by saying you have a short session so members can campaign. So now we're talking about the campaign. Let's go to some of the legislation that you sponsored this past session. And I also want you to evaluate and grade how the session went. And were there any surprises in legislation that passed?
Not about surprises. You know, it's funny, you know, you kind of get in where you fit in. And so I had a number of bills, you know, there's 98 members of the House of Representatives. And so you kind of try to find areas where you can focus on your niche areas. So I focus a lot on clean energy and public safety and housing. So I had bills in that area. The bill that passed and hopefully will be signed by the governor was a light bulb recycling bill, an environmental bill. You know, light bulbs are very costly and very dangerous to recycle, particularly light bulbs that have mercury. Mercury is a neurotoxin. And so this is a bill that shifted the responsibility for the cost of recycling from the consumer to the producers. So as James Brown famously said, if you want to be the boss, you got to pay the cost. So
Representative Hackney, just mentioned that recycling of light bulbs, a gentleman by the name of Elton Mason has a commitment for 40 acres in Maple Valley, and he wants to set up this kind of recycling program where you take the batteries and the toxic stuff and recycle it. But he's being a brother, he's having a hard time trying to get anybody to close the deal. But it's a fantastic idea. And I think that we all have to survive in the environment. It's in the best interest of all of us, regardless of colors, or age, or anything else, that the environment is in good shape. I just wanted to mention that because some people, and he's a young African-American brother, and some people are in that thought process. So why don't we go to the next one in terms of your priorities in legislation?
My priority, I had a bill that would have, you know, so basically one of the major issues with housing is a lack of supply, particularly for lower income, middle income individuals. I had a bill that did not go through, which I'm very disappointed, which would have provided a tax break for construction materials that are used in low income housing. So whatever you can do to lower the price of low income housing will help increase the supply. Unfortunately, that bill did not did not make it through. But to talk about just the bills in general, we had six initiatives that were passed by a conservative billionaire to the legislature. And all six, I think, well, three of them were extremely harmful, and they are going to be on the ballot in November. And that is to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. The Climate Commitment Act is a regulatory scheme that requires manufacturers and producers who create the most pollution to pay for that. And that money is then used to mitigate the harm of climate change. So it's a perfect scheme. The more you pollute, the more you pay. And the idea is if you make pollution more expensive, then investing in cleaner technology becomes less expensive comparatively. So if that bill is repealed, we're going to lose billions of dollars because, for the people that pollute, that's what they pay in essence to pollute. So that would be a huge hole in our budget. We also
Representative
have
Hatney, I just want to say that guy got the signatures because they had black folks collecting the signatures in front of Fred Meyer, in front of Target, and everywhere you look, you had black folks collecting the signatures. I looked at it and I said, "Well, this looks like a Donald Trump
It is really
agenda
bad.
to me." So anyway, but
Also,
that's what happened though, because if you see somebody black and they're collecting signatures, at least read what they have in your sign.
40% of all the revenue of those, so that's billions of dollars, has to be used on communities. We call them frontline communities. You're not allowed to use race, but basically communities that have been left behind and that are the lowest income and are the most vulnerable. So we all know what communities those are. So we there's it's dictated by law that a lot of that money is going to come into converting people who have gas, natural gas, to electricity for schools and buildings, HVAC systems, electric vehicle charging systems, all of those things, the investments that need to be made in our communities so that we can keep up. The 11th district, I like to say, in South King County, we have some of the worst air quality in the state. And the University of Washington has indicated that adolescents in my district have a higher chance of getting respiratory disease, and adults have shorter lifespans. Now, Eddie, they're academics, so they won't say causation, but they will say there's a very high correlation to pollution and respiratory disease and death. So this clean energy should be on the top of everyone's mind, particularly in our community, because we suffer the most. And
All
then
across America is the same way.
yeah, and we also we there was a repeal of the capital gains tax. Again, a perfect tax. This tax is only for people who make over $250,000 just in investments, but it doesn't count your business. And if you sell your business, it doesn't count your house. So if you're making $250,000, not in your job, just in investments, it only covers about 6% of Washingtonians. And that is going to create a huge amount of money for early education. So repealing the Climate Commitment Act and the capital gains tax would put a serious hole in the Washington state budget. And these are this again by this conservative billionaire who just doesn't want to pay his share. So those are two very important bills. I hope everyone knows to vote no. You do not want to repeal. That's taking money out of your pocket. And it's not money you're spending. It's taking money from people that pollute and people who benefit on the wealthiest people in the state. They should pay higher taxes, and polluters should pay for the pollution. So
And you
those are
know the
two.
thing, Representative Hackney, is that when a ballot, I mean, initiatives like that are out being circulated to be signed. I think, some folks got to take responsibility for creating coming out and opposing it very publicly and informing the public so they know what they're signing. I'm saying everybody doesn't have that platform, but I really think that there should have been an investment made in our community once again, who will be hurt more than anyone else. But I think when initiatives like that come up, there has to be a counter initiative to let people know what they're signing, what it's all about, and what the implications are. Now, there's a couple of other things that I wanted to speak on, and that is I don't know if you've been keeping up with the lack of progress by the state in terms of doing business with African Americans and in some instances other people of color. But since I since I'm one of the co-founders of the Washington chapter of the National Association of Minority Contractors, we have been monitoring this, and it seems to me that anyone that speaks up for justice for Black folks in Washington State has a problem. So in 2021, African American business did 0.18% of the state's business. Governor Inslee signed an executive order January 2022, but at the end of the year, African Americans did 0.22% after executive order. Then we have a situation where we have like one company that has probably 70% of the trucking contracts in Western Washington. And recently, it was found out that he falsified his self-certification. But the attorney general is telling Department of Enterprise Services and Lika Fernandez and the Office of Minority Women Business Enterprise that he can reapply again. So how can somebody falsify their records, take all the money, and then allow it to come back in? So the NEMC, that's our organization, we're requesting a meeting with the attorney general because there's no way. Actually, the FBI should be all over this. And we've been reaching out to members of the Congressional Black Caucus and others to help us with this situation because it's having a detrimental effect. They're saying we don't have enough Black businesses. Well, if you see everybody else going out of business, to give you a good example, each prime contractor can hire their own inclusion manager. There's a company called Graham Construction, and the inclusion manager called in 12 or 13 different businesses, 10 of them were Black truckers. They get to the meeting. Gentleman I mentioned earlier, Elton Mason, says the contract has already been awarded, and you got people in there thinking they're come looking for an opportunity, and the contract had already been awarded. It turns out the same person who had that contract has the rest of them and falsified his. So I know you're an attorney, and it would be really good if we could have the members of the Black Caucus, the Black Members Caucus, look into that on behalf of the Black community, because we're not getting any participation. It's discouraging people from going into business, trying to do business with the state.
Well, that's unfortunate. I was not aware of that situation. I would love to get involved. Maybe we'll require a policy bill that says that people that get, we can make laws that say that you can forfeit participation by committing fraud. And maybe what the attorney general is saying is he needs that authorization in law, and maybe that's something we can work on. Now, I do remember the governor signed the executive order because I was told that we did not need to pass a bill, that merely an executive order would solve the problem. Now that we see that it's not, I think we have to go back and convene a group and figure out what we're going to need to do. I've worked with you on this issue since I've arrived here in Washington, and it's unfortunate we have not made much progress. We have not made much progress at all, and we do need to find some leaders, both in the legislative and the executive branch, who make this a priority. Excuse me, because this has been going on far too long, far too long.
Representative Hackney, you're absolutely right. And the National Association of Minority Contractors, the Black Truckers, and the other folks who have been shut out would definitely encourage and embrace your support for this issue because we have to have a drum major for change. And we're on the outside, you're on the inside, you're an attorney. And if you get the numbers and tell them to leave Lika Fernandez alone because she's just doing her job, and some people in the different agencies get upset because she's insisting they do the right thing. So that's unfortunate. So I think she's fallen out of favor with the governor because, she's a Trump. No, she is just telling the truth and holding people accountable. They don't want to be held accountable. So I should have information to share with you, sir. Representative Hackney, thank you very much for your time today. And thank you for your leadership in getting justice, economic justice for the Black community in Washington State.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for being on.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Okay, Eric, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the president and CEO of the Greater Seattle YMCA.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
At Sound Transit, we not only connect more people to more places, we're making life better for all. We're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire region of opportunities, like jobs and school. If you have an Orca card, you can just tap and go. We have reduced fares for seniors and riders with disabilities. For adults with lower incomes, check out Orca Lift and pay just a dollar for your ride. To plan your trip or to learn more, visit us at soundtransit.org.
Going our own way every day. Alternative Talk 1150.
All right, Eddie Rye back at Urban Forum Northwest. I want to thank the City of Seattle's Purchase Construction Services Office, the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office, Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity and Inclusion, the SeaTac Bar Group, LLC, and they got to have another spot out at SeaTac, people. Anyway, my next guest, I learned a lot during the break. Not only is she the president and CEO, but she's also an attorney, an engineer, a patent attorney, and has been the first woman and the first person of color to ever lead the 140-year-old Greater Seattle YMCA, Loria Yeadon. So, Ms. Loria, I'm saying your name right.
You are. Very okay. Good. Thank
yeah,
you.
So, and you've been here 5 years, and I was just looking at in the Medium, they have a editorial, this good friend of mine, Dr. Ife Williams, she's a tri-ethnic columnist. She says, Black women still making history against great odds. Well, we got some around here that's made history 5 years ago, because you have been at the Greater Seattle YMCA since 2019. That came through a national search. But why don't you share with some of our listeners about your background? It was very interesting and intriguing.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm from Virginia in the rural South. And that really shaped a lot of my perspectives, you know, growing up in the rural South. As a matter of fact, when I was in first grade, that was the first year the schools were integrated. So I've experienced a lot growing up in the South. I was educated on the East Coast through engineering school at the University of Virginia. I went on shortly thereafter to get a master's in electrical engineering from Georgia Institute of Technology. And then 5 years after completing my engineering studies to become a patent attorney. And I've been in a lot of different industries. I started my corporate career in telecommunications, where I designed and wrote requirements for fiber optic systems. Those same systems that are delivering high bandwidth services to your home today. I was part of that team that worked on pioneering that technology a long, long time ago. And after telecommunications, I went into aerospace and to manufacturing at Honeywell. And there I became the CEO of one of Honeywell's subsidiaries, Honeywell Intellectual Properties, Inc., where what we did made the difference between that company making its quarterly earnings and missing its quarterly earnings, really adding pennies to earnings with a very small, robust team focused on licensing intellectual property. It was Intellectual Ventures that brought me to the Pacific Northwest, where I led Intellectual Ventures' largest fund, the Invention Investment Fund, with over $5 billion of invested capital to buy technologies for leading tech companies around the globe. I stepped away from that in 2014. I really thought I was done with my work career. I was ready to go trek behind my kids who were in college and college athletes and just getting back to life that I didn't have a lot of, climbing that ladder in corporate America, but the universe had a different idea. And I began to do a lot more work on the nonprofit side. Girl Scouts of the USA. I was on that national board, Legal Momentum, the Women's Legal Defense and Education Fund. I was the vice chair there. And then I joined a local board here called Stolen Youth. The mission of that organization is to end child sex trafficking in Washington state. And that work really moved me and let me know that we need more people who have that corporate experience to get on the front line and to bring their total selves to work for a community. And that's when this opportunity at the Y came up. And I had not worked with the Y extensively before. Everybody knows the Y. The Y is like an old shoe in community. It's always there. And people tend to forget about what the Y does. But when I took a closer look, I realized that this mission is so powerful and there's a lot that I could bring to it. So the rest is history. I've been at the Y since 2019. Pandemic was not part of the job description when I joined in 2019, but now I really know why I'm here. And I really feel like I've come home to be and to serve exactly where I'm supposed to be, helping our folk.
Can you share with our listeners some of the programs that the Y has going right now? And are there different programs and different Ys across the city?
Yes. Well, first, let me talk about the scope of the Y. So people know the what the Greater Seattle YMCA entails. We have big facilities that people see. You see the big YMCA brand all over the Greater Seattle area, from its points as far south as Auburn, going north to North Shore and Shoreline, and as far west out to Snoqualmie and everything in between. We also have camp facilities. One of our camp facilities is at Camp Orkaila. Many people have experiences or you've sent your kids. That's in the San Juan Islands on Orcas Island. We have Camp Coleman, which is Key Peninsula down in Pierce County. And we have a new overnight camp that we are building in Lewis County at Mineral Lake. We purchased 2,100 acres there during the pandemic with the goal of enabling more young people to experience the health benefits of being in the great outdoors. So at our branches that are more local, we do what people traditionally think of as the YMCA. We're a swimming gym. We're a place that you can come, you can learn how to swim, you can improve your whole person health, coming into our gyms and working out. But we are so much more. And that's what people miss about the YMCA. We also have a significant social services part of our work. And that organization, one part of what they do is to house 450 young people who are experiencing homelessness every single night in the city of Seattle. And we don't just provide the housing, we provide the wraparound services. So when those young people come to us, are served by us, are hugged, you know, really embraced by us, many of them, most of them never return to homelessness. And we have young people who are coming to us who've aged out of foster care, who've been referred to us by the drug court. And some of them have come out of systems and they just need some extra support. The Y is there for these young people.
Would you repeat how many of those young people you're serving?
At least 450 every night. And, you know, the need is significantly higher than that. Now, we're one of the few organizations in town that really meet the needs of youth and young adults. And that's
how can someone help you if someone wants to make a contribution, a donation, or be able to help? How can they help you?
We would love people to walk alongside. The Y has never done his work alone, so we would welcome people to walk alongside the Y through their donations, through volunteering, and when you become a member of the Y, you enable us to help the entire community. So we invite people, come in, take care of your health, join us as a member. And that also helps us help others. And you can learn about all of those facets of engagement at the Y at our website at seattleymca.org.
Now, in terms of the programs consistent throughout the city, well, you have pretty much the entire county, right?
We do. We have all of King County.
And so I'm just trying to figure out, so are the programs in Bellevue the same as they would be on 23rd and Olive? Well, they used to be on 23rd and Olive, I should say.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that, because that's something we've been working on very hard since 2019. Whether you're coming into a YMCA in Bellevue or Sammamish or Auburn or SeaTac, our goal has been that you have the same experience. You have the same opportunity to take care of your health. The quality of the facilities are the same. The support of personnel. And I am so proud of our team, because we feel like we've gotten there. There's always more that we could do with more resources. But yes, you will see the same level of programming. And a lot of our programming is offered virtually. So if you cannot access something in one branch, you might be able to access it virtually from wherever you are, even outside of the King County area, like diabetes prevention, some of our weight management programs. And we also have what's called Y360, which is purely online. You can get into a workout class online from your living room, and we can help you take care of your health.
Now, the programs that are offered in each individual Y, what would they consist of?
So everything that I just mentioned, you will find at most of our YMCAs. Some of our smaller YMCAs, like we have a project that we have our eyes on in the University District where we want to renovate that YMCA. And our dream is to also bring housing, affordable housing. So there is not a pool there yet, but it's on the drawing board. And we want to make sure that we have a full facility that can serve the community in the University District. But for most of those facilities across King County, you'll have pools, you'll have gyms, you'll have full workout facilities. There are classes, all sorts of classes where people can come in, weightlifting. There's cooking classes for young people. There are clinics that they can take for sports. There are sports leagues that young people can participate in. I happen to be a pickleball player. And I'm in the gym every morning playing pickleball. We have communities around different activities that love to get together and take care of their health.
Now, at the downtown Y, does that have housing?
Thank you for that question. The downtown Y itself does not have housing. However, I'm right now at the YMCA's headquarters at 4th and Marion downtown. And right above my office are 20 units of studio units for youth and young adults who are experiencing homelessness. So we provide transitional housing here, but we don't provide, we had a hotel years and years ago as part of our facility. That hoteling side of the Y is long gone, but we do provide that transitional housing right on site at our headquarters downtown.
Now, each individual Y, does they have their individual director and staff? Give me an idea and our listeners' idea of how many people would be there, director, whatever positions they have.
Yes, each one of our facilities have a full staff. We have a branch executive or a senior branch executive running each of the facilities across King County. So we have West Seattle, we have downtown, Shoreline, we have North Shore, Snoqualmie, Bellevue, Kent. I mentioned Auburn earlier, SeaTac. I'm coming all the way around our city. But yeah, we have branches throughout King County. But in addition, the Y is one of the largest, if not the largest, provider of childcare in King County, which is so important. Childcare, early education, you know, before and after school care, summer day camp. The Y provides that because we realize how important that is to families, especially working moms. You know, we'd love to be able to say, oh, this is important for the entire family, and it is. But we all know that today, a lot of the childcare responsibilities still fall to moms. And so, and that's why so many women left the workforce during the pandemic, because when families had to make a hard choice because childcare was not available, it often resulted in the mom stepping away from her career. So we are ecstatic that we are increasing our childcare and our early education so that more moms can get back to work, more families can be supported, mom and dads can be successful, and families can thrive.
Now, is this childcare available? Is this available to every individual Y, or is there one or two specific locations?
We have 70 facilities that are separate from our main health and wellness facilities. So we might be in schools, school districts and classrooms after school or before school. We might have our own standalone facility. It varies. If you go to our website, you can see a full list of where we are across the greater Seattle area.
Give us that website address one more time.
Absolutely.
Seattle. I'll put it underneath your picture on Facebook.
Okay. SeattleYMCA.org.
Okay. Well, Madam CEO and President and my church mate at New Beginnings Christian Fellowship.
Yes, sir.
I sit right behind, right in front of you and Mr. Joseph. And so it's good to see you, and congratulations, because you're such a humble person. You would never know that you have all these accomplishments and have such a huge responsibility in delivering to the people in need. And that's the most important thing. So you do Jesus' work every day, and that's good to hear.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all that you do for all of us. I so appreciate and admire you. And Mrs. Rye, I just enjoy seeing you two together. You inspire us. Let us know if we can ever help you two in any way. And come out to Hawaii. I'd love to give you a tour.
I'm going to do that. She sings in the choir at St. Therese. That's why she's not there every Sunday, because on Easter Sunday, I guess I'm going to do the 8:00. And then go to St. Teresa 12 o'clock or whatever is happening. My ass is. So thanks very much.
You bet.
Okay, Eric, we'll go ahead and put some Martin Luther King on, or take this quick break while we get Toshiko Hasegawa on the line.
At Sound Transit, we not only give people more reliable ways to get around, we're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire system of opportunities like jobs, school, friends and family, and to the airport. Our commitment to economic development provides opportunities for women and people of color to compete fairly for Sound Transit contracts. All of this helps our regional workforce grow and thrive. Go to soundtransit.org and search DBE to learn more.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
Alternative Talk 1150. It's good for what ails you. This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA.
Okay, Eddie Ryan back with my next guest. She is the executive director on the Washington State Commission on Asian and Pacific American Affairs, and she's also a member of the Seattle Port Commission, and that's none other than Toshiko Grace Hasegawa, who's also been in several demonstrations with me when she was really, really young. So she has been well-seasoned as a fighter, and also has been the recipient of an award last August 28th, not even a year or two ago, from the Martin Luther King Commemoration Committee, where she's done a lot of work with us in the early days before she got married and had all these other responsibilities. So welcome again, Toshiko Hasegawa.
Thank you, Eddie Wright Jr. I'm honored to be here.
All right. So you're heading an organization that is having a golden celebration. The commission is 50 years old, founded in 1974. So
can you believe it's been 50 years since that group of dedicated volunteers advocated that community members of color have voice and visibility at the highest office of the state and for the governor's office? They organized as an outcome of the civil rights movement, knew that they needed to be at the table so that the government was going to be actually in service to and reflective of their will and their priorities. It was originally established in 1972 as the Governor's Council on Asian American Affairs. And then the Washington State Legislature took action 2 years later in 1974 to create it as a standing state agency, the Washington State Commission on Asian American Affairs. Now, back then, racially, Asians were considered to be Japanese, Chinese, Filipino, Korean folks. That term has evolved over the course of time as we come to understand constructs of race, ethnicity. So in 1995, in a movement led by Pacific Islander women, the commission was renamed by Governor Mike Lowry to the Washington State Commission on Asian Pacific American Affairs, which is what we know it as now. And I imagine that 50 years from now, our name will look different once again as we continue to understand who our community members are. It's been 50 years, Eddie, and we really look forward to celebrating with community members.
Now, Toshiko, you know, being an OG, when I grew up, you know, it was Japanese, Chinese, Filipinos, and Jewish folks. We almost all had to live in the same community. But right now, there are some Asian folks and a lot of folks. Can you tell our listeners how many different nationalities of Asians there are in the Pacific Northwest?
So the umbrella term that we use now to describe our community members are Asian Americans and Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders. Now, together, AANHPIs come from over 42 countries from around the world. We speak over 100 languages and over 1,000 different dialects. But there are so many differences between them. I mean, it's really the diversity that makes our community so special. And the Asian community itself is not a monolith. So you've got South Asians from India or Nepal. You've got Southeast Asians from Vietnam, Thailand, and Cambodia. You have East Asians like Korea, China, and Japan. And then there's the whole entire piece of the continent of Asia that by the census is still not racially recognized as Asian. So those are predominantly Muslim countries. It begs the question, Eddie, who benefits and who is hurt by the term as we understand it now? And understanding the constructs of race and ethnicity is something that evolves over time. At this point in time, it's been 50 years of Kappa. So 50 years from now, I'm interested to see what the community has decided.
Now, can you share with our listeners, like, what are some of the services that are provided by the Commission on Asian Pacific American Affairs?
Well, the commission is not a service provider, you see, and I think that's where the biggest misconstruction is. What we do is we have 12 commissioners who make up some of the cultural diversity and geographic diversity of the state. And their jobs are to have eyes and ears in community to know what their priorities are, what their hardships are. And we advise the governor, the state legislature, and all other state agencies on changes to all programs and policies that impact our community members. We don't provide direct services, but you can bet that we're in the room advising on how some of those service providers, like the Department of Commerce or the Department of Health or even Corrections, can have a more equitable operation. So we weigh in via state committees, work groups, task forces, councils. We hold public events and statewide listening sessions on the hardships of our small businesses across Washington state. We do so in a culturally specific way so that folks have language access. And then we'd like to be able to promote that through lobby days in the state legislative sessions, where we get thousands of community members from around the state in front of lawmakers and decision makers. It's truly rewarding work.
So would you give our listeners the contact information for some people who might want to get in touch? Or
www.kappa.wa.gov, and Kappa is spelled C-A-P-A-A. That's www.kappa.wa.gov. But I recommend that folks make their way down this Saturday to Highline College. Doors will open at 4 o'clock p.m. The program will start promptly at 5. We're going to have a variety of cultural performances, a buffet line for food, and we're going to be honoring some community members who've done some pretty amazing work within their respective communities. And we've got a couple of surprises up our sleeve as well. So everybody is welcome. It's open to the public. Come on down to Highline College at 4 o'clock p.m.
And that is the golden celebration that she's referring to, right?
That's right. That's correct. Kappa's golden celebration. We only celebrate every 5 years. So this should really be a treat.
Well, Heyward Evans has joined us on the line. You know, on April 4th, you know, we are going to observe the 56th anniversary of the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so we definitely want to support from your commission as one of the sponsors of the event.
And that's an exciting another thing that the commission does. If folks go to www.kappa.wa.gov, hit the resources tab and drop down to apply for sponsorship. The commission is happy to sponsor community-based events at a maximum amount of $500. Again, anybody can apply, and we look forward to supporting the event that's coming up, commemorating the assassination of Dr. King, and we look forward to standing in solidarity with you there.
Well, Heyward Evans is going to give you a brief rundown on what we're proposing. It's in draft form right now, but hey, why don't you let Toshiko Hasegawa know what we're doing? So she, matter of fact, was that 2 years ago, Toshiko, we honored you?
It was, yes, it was 2 years ago already.
Yeah, August 28th, right?
Yeah, because my baby girl was one.
1963 March on Washington, D.C. that led to African Americans getting their civil rights and voting rights the next year. All which are under attack. Everybody's who are non-Trump voting rights are under attack. So, hey, why don't you share with the commissioner? You have a couple of minutes, Toshiko?
I do.
Yeah, hey, why don't you give a brief rundown on what the MLKCC is proposing for April 4th at Holgate Street Church of Christ? Hayward is looking for something. And his mouth is moving, but he's not coming through. Anyway, we hope to have, and right now, tentatively, the event will be carried by Rainier. Nope, you still can't hear you. Toshiko, thank you very much. I know you're busy.
Thank you so much for the time. I look forward to seeing you all this weekend.
Okay, you will see me this weekend. I will definitely be at Highline College for the golden celebration of the Commission on Asian Pacific American Affairs. Thank you very much for all the work you do in the community. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Okay, we do have Heyward Evans.
Oh, thank you for having me, Eddie. Now, boy, I was hoping to get Toshiko, too. She is absolutely fantastic, and I know you went over it, but for those who don't know, her and Dominic Stevens were our first MCs for our first event for the 50th anniversary assassination of Dr. King, and we're talking about April 4th, 20—what year was that? Well, anyway, 2018. It was in 2018. Mm-hmm. So Chico and Dominique Stevens were our first master of ceremonies. And she was
at Mount Zion Baptist Church.
At Mount Zion Baptist Church. She was absolutely fantastic. All the elected officials were there. Camilla Jayapo, Representative Smith. I mean, it was a fantastic event. And she did a fantastic job. But so I'm so done. I got to say how just proud I am of Toshiko. And I know that you mentioned it, Eddie. Where in on August 28, 2022, she got the 59th anniversary march on Washington, the Ake Karose Award for public servant. So again, you know, just been real proud of her and everything she's done with us.
When people want to know why is it so important that we observe the assassination of Dr. King, and why we have something on August 28th. Well, let's just deal with April 4th first. That's a big enough issue.
Let's do April 4th. Look, it's what we call our day of remembrance. So many great people, fantastic people who've done significant contributions to our community passed away. And we're talking about just this past year, or just this year alone, we had the first African-American elected to the state legislature. Peggy Maxey passed away. And then a couple of years ago, our other legislature, Vivian Caver, passed away. And then we can go all the way back even to Edwin T. Pratt. And I know a lot of folks out there don't even remember the name Edwin T. Pratt. The brother was assassinated as executive director of the Urban League, trying to integrate in housing out in Shoreline. Never found his murderer. But there's so many people and events that have made significant contributions to our community, and we're just saying it's a day to recognize it. Recognize those people, recognize those events, but just for every individual here in Martin Luther King Jr. County, recognize your loved ones who've passed away, who've helped you get to where you're at. This is just a time of remembrance and a time to appreciate who we are, where we are now, where we're going, and to remember those folks who loved us, who sacrificed for us to get us where we are. That's its purpose.
Well, I tell you right now, people got to be really motivated because the gains we made by the civil rights leaders of the 50s and 60s, the 63 March on Washington, August 28, 1963, August 28th was selected because that was the day Emmett Till was murdered in 1955. And our voting rights are under attack, our civil rights are under attack. What people got to understand is that the Civil Rights Act of 64 gave Black people in this country, the African descendants of the United States enslaved, their rights. In 1965, the Voting Rights Act of 65 gave Black people their voting rights. Everybody else had voting rights. So now we see what's happening, this right-wing populism that's going on right now, where anything that Black folks fought for, like I keep reminding people, when Black people participate by getting to the University of Washington, don't play football or basketball, or get a job or get a contract, that's not preferential treatment. 250 years of slavery, 100 years of Jim Crow, dying in every war, including in segregated units, liberating some people now whose relatives we liberated now are our biggest foe, like Stephen Miller and Ed Bloom. So it's really important for the Black community to get re-engaged, get involved. We got to defend what we have and fight for what they're trying to take away from us.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because, again, people need to realize the Supreme Court has pulled back our Voter Rights Act. Come on. And you know there's voter suppression going on. And at the same time, affirmative action is gone. You got a lot of folks out there who counted on the affirmative action programs that now the Supreme Court has overturned. And they're saying there's not enough information. Eddie, you know how many disparity studies we went here. Multiply that by the United States of America. There's so much documentation, you can probably stack it from here to the moon, that says the same thing. There's discrimination out here. Black folk have been abused, misused, particularly the descendants of the United States enslaved, and all people of color. We've lost billions of dollars in farmland we used to have down south, and we never did get that little 40 acres and a mule. And that's why I'm for reparations. I'm going to be just clear about that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, but the thing about it is that if folks want to erase history, they don't want people to read about how they used to have a Sunday outing, bring a picnic basket, and pick a couple of nicks to hang. That's okay, right. That was the outing. When they, like when they did the Black Wall Street, there was a whole bunch of many Black Wall Streets. They'd always kill the Black folks on and burn their property down, kill them, and then take the land. So when we start talking about reparations, we got to talk about our land, too, the land that was taken from us by force. And
these were supposedly, you know, when you look at those old photographs, they look like hillbillies. No, these were the leading citizens of their town who led the charge, who were the ones who implemented all those tactics and strategies. Right now, maybe the Ku Klux Klan is not wearing that little hood. He's wearing a three-piece suit and a tie and talking the same thing to try to oppress us and keep us down. But if we don't stand up for ourselves, who's going to stand up for us? Got to stand up for yourself. And that's why April 4th, 5 o'clock, Holgate Street Church of Christ, it's free too, and we're going to be providing the dinner. And I just want to say it was Catfish Corner, and that food was absolutely fantastic at our last event. It was fantastic. You missed a great treat for Black History Month. Don't miss this one for the Day of Remembrance.
And we want to thank Minister Jimmy Hurd, too, who is a senior pastor of Holgate Street Church, and Mr. Paul Butler. Is it Mr. Butler?
Yeah.
Who have coordinates for the church. And so we'll also be doing some things. Hopefully, Rainier Avenue Radio will carry it again live. And then I'm going to get with Frank P. Barrow at the Z Twins, so to get something on there so we can keep people informed of what's happening. And next week, we're going to talk about, there are about four or five Good Friday services. One's going to be at noon at First AME Church, which is next Friday. Then there's going to be something out by church by the side of the road. And then over at New Hope Missionary Baptist Church with Reverend Jeffrey. Well, Hayward, thanks a lot, man, for your time today and all the work. I'll talk with you a little later on so we can finish getting this work done for April 4th at Holgate Street Church, the 56th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. So thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
We're also going to get Dr. Quentin Morris on the Key to Change. They have an event next week, and we'll see if honoring Sheila Edwards Lang, and they're doing something at Benaroy Hall as their spring fundraiser. So I want to thank the City of Seattle's Personal Construction Services Office, Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office, and SeaTac Bar Group, LLC. So, Eric, thank you for helping me out today. And we'll hear a little bit more of Martin Luther King next week and the following week leading up to April 4th. Thank you very much.